If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to chefs Andrew Zimmern and Jose Andreas. Plus, Andrew and Jose take a few more questions backstage at Studio 8G. Then, Seth talks to author Paul Yoon. Plus, Paul takes a few more questions backstage at Studio 8G. Now, let's get to the show.
Our guests are award-winning television host and chef Andrew Zimmern and Michelin-rated chef and humanitarian Jose Andreas. They can both be seen in the premiere episode of What's Eating America, hosted by Zimmern, which airs Sunday at 9 p.m. on MSNBC. Please welcome to the show Andrew Zimmern and chef Jose Andreas. Welcome. I'm so happy to have you here. This is your first time here?
First time here.
Jose, you've been here before. We had some mezcal last time you were here.
We didn't have mezcal. We supported local economies.
That's right. That's right. We were supporting local businesses.
Farmers. You were supporting farmers.
Avocado, guacamole.
Yeah.
We had guacamole.
We did have guacamole.
Don't worry.
It's all coming back to you.
No, yeah. Guacamole was good.
It was great. This show, the thesis behind this show is that there's more that unites us than divides us.
Yes.
And you sort of use food as the... What is it something that connects us?
Well, there's no more important time in the history of this country than we need to take a look at the issues of the day. Sadly, a lot of those issues are conceived of as being polarizing. We have much more in common than what divides us. And to tell those stories through the lens of food is the most, I think, accurate way to do that, and a way that people haven't seen before. So whether it's immigration, our episode, addiction, health and wellness, voter rights, climate crisis, this was the time and this was the network, and I'm just thrilled that the series starts this Sunday.
And this is an episode about immigration, and one of the core points of this episode is that all of our food, not just international cuisine, but the people who make it and how they make it, is sort of supported by immigrants.
Can I tell something about
Please.
The show?
Yeah.
So imagine for a second, we're able to rent the restaurant inside Congress. Yes, we do that. Why? Because in America, you can do anything you want. What's your president, people?
Yes.
So we rented...
You rented out the congressional cafeteria.
And we invited congressmen, senators, Republicans and Democrats, many of other people. And we were able to fit everybody inside. And we went into the kitchen. And we saw everything that was happening in that kitchen. Every vegetable, every fish. And we filmed the boxes of vegetables. And we were able to follow those vegetables all the way to the place they come from. And guess what we found, people? That actually undocumented immigrants are the ones feeding our senators and congressmen. Yeah. And this is a big lie.
Yeah. In fact, every single plate of food in America, every ingredient is touched by the hand of either an undocumented, documented, or migrant visa worker. And we followed food from crab in Maryland to items on the menu at the Trump Grill to the garden, the giant farms in the Salad Bowl of America in Salinas Valley in California, and then use that as a storytelling tool to fill out the rest of the episode, telling real stories of real human beings.
Did you know right away you wanted Jose for this episode?
I've been trying for three or 4 years.
Yeah. Let me tell you, people. He needed a translator.
Are you okay if Jose Andrews?
He needed a translator. I was his official translator because his English is kind of so-so. And I was going through the entire show translating to the people what he was asking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth. There's a lot of truth to that.
You're very hard to follow.
Yes.
Whereas Jose, I'm with every step of the way.
The thing is that, you know, we're in friends. We've been real life for many, many years, and we've been looking for a project to kind of work on together. And when this started to come alive, you know, I got at our production company in Minnesota, Intuitive Content. Everyone is jumping up and down like immigration, Jose, you, MSNBC, got to do it. And then the network was kind enough to give us a 2-hour platform to do this. So it's a really special episode. I think around an issue that if you had to pick one, is the single great issue of our time. This is something that's been, you know, unsolved by lots of different administrations, you know, both Democrat and Republican. And as my buddy says all the time, immigration is not a problem for America to solve. It's a
opportunity for America to seize.
There we go. Well, I'm so happy you're doing this show. I'm so happy you have Jose with you on the first episode. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for being here.
Andrew Zimmern, Chef Jose Andres, everybody. What's Eating America premieres this Sunday at 9 p.m. on MSNBC. We'll be right back, everybody.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm backstage with Andrew and Jose. Thanks for doing this.
Sure.
Thank you for having us.
You guys obviously have a nice rapport. How long have you known each other?
Since Eisenhower was president.
So in this life, many, many years, in few other lives, I think we've exchanged friendship in four other segments of our life in the last few hundred
Six reincarnations.
Years.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're friends in real life, which is funny because people pick
really?
Up on that. I've babysat
for
your children
record,
when they were younger.
For himself, okay? I don't endorse
That's fine.
His message.
Ask your wife and kids. They'll tell you the truth.
Okay.
Yes, we are friends in real life.
When did you meet?
First time, probably
we cannot talk about
14
it.
Years ago, 12, for the first time.
Yeah.
And
I don't have any recollection. I try to forget them.
There was a very, in my life, Jose, it's scratchy in his memory, but it was about 11, 12 years ago, we were judging an episode of Iron Chef. And you're there all day, and it was taking a while, and it was late. It was like 10 o'clock at night on like a Sunday or a Monday.
Iron Chef, you know, when everybody's trying to beat each other.
Yeah.
Very mean show on the Food Network.
And
nasty. You want to beat the opponent. Why? Why? Okay, keep going.
And then everyone leaves right afterwards, and he said, come with me. We got to go meet a couple people. I said, it's Sunday night or Monday at 11 o'clock. And he's like, no, we got a couple appointments. And over the course of the next 4 or 5 hours, we went to two different restaurants, met with several different groups of people, famous magazine editors, politicians, thought leaders. And
hey, don't show off.
I
Come
watched.
On.
They were your friends. And I watched as Jose was sort of educating himself and building his awareness level up and trying to find out places that he could be helpful. And then he gave me a big speech on the walk back to our hotel about if you have a big platform, you have to use it for something. It was a transformative moment in my life. And I think we got a lot closer that night. And then we been real friends ever since.
Andrew is amazing because, yes, he has an amazing platform. His life story is unbelievable. He's a person that probably in one moment was of what we will consider bottom life moment. And he came back. And he came back strong. And since then, he's been giving a voice to so many other people on TV and off TV. And that right now, he's doing this amazing show for MSNBC about bringing real issues from his point of view, and bringing his life experience and sharing this with everybody in America, everybody around the world is amazing. So when he asked me to do the show about immigration with him, I was so, so proud, so honored, so humble. Say, sure, I'm going to be next to you because you have a story to tell, and I want to be next to you to tell that story.
The funny part was is that with the type of TV that I was doing, and I always had wanted to do something with Jose on camera, we just had never found the right thing. And then when I saw that that this thing was probably going to happen, I called him up and I said, you're not going to believe it. Like, the right network, the right point in time, the right issue. He was in right away.
Can you talk English? I mean, come on.
Immigration.
Ah, immigration. Which, by the way,
immigration, as I often say, is not a problem for America to solve. It's an opportunity for America to seize.
Boom.
That's Jose's line.
Because we're all immigrants. I steal it all the time. Can you imagine that Hamilton became president?
Yeah.
If Hamilton became president, probably today, maybe a guy like me could actually run for president.
Mm-hmm.
Because probably by now we will change the laws and we will allow maybe foreigners too to be able to run for president. Why I say that? It's such a big lie that somebody that is just born in America or born in Spain or born in any other country just is going to be a better person, or love their country where they live more than an immigrant. I know many immigrants that some of them, they don't even have a passport, not even a green card. So technically, probably they are undocumented and illegal. That every day they wake up giving everything they have to America. By cooking, by doing whatever jobs.
Paying taxes.
Pay taxes even they are undocumented. And this show is telling this kind of lie. That to belong to a place, you don't belong because you own a passport. You don't belong because somebody tells you, yes, you are and you are not. You belong because you work as hard as the person next to you to belong. And a lot of people belong in America, belong in Spain, in any other country, only because they're there working hard just to provide for their families, for the communities, and make the country where they live a better place.
Yeah. And the way for our audience to connect with that is very simply over food, right? I mean, everyone's talk about food. They read magazines about food, buy books about food. Food is a cultural touchstone that has become preeminent over the last 30 or 40 years as a cultural touchstone.
Tell me what you eat. And I will tell you who you are.
So the fact of the matter is that we wanted to demonstrate to people that every plate of food in America is touched at one point by the hand of an immigrant.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're sitting here in the green room, right, getting ready to go do the show. The crackers were trucked by immigrants. The cheese, the cows are milked by immigrants. The fruit is picked by immigrants. I mean, I'm just watching. I'm looking at everything. The popcorn. There's nothing here that isn't touched by the hand of an immigrant in this country or a migrant visaed worker.
Well, we're really appreciative that you're both here, and the show is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Sunday nights at 9 on MSNBC.
Tune in.
Do you watch it?
Yeah, I watched the first one.
I didn't
one.
Watch it yet because he didn't send it to me.
That is so not true. Don't dog me like that.
He sent it to me, but he said, you cannot make any changes. So, okay, then
that
watch it.
That is not true. Here's the rough
cut. That's the way this guy treats an immigrant.
Do you see what I have to deal with in real life? Imagine what it's like ordering in a restaurant with him.
And, you know, for me, it was so hard to work with a guy that has an accent. I mean, I've been, you know, it's funny because everybody tells me, you have an accent. Really? And you don't?
No,
like, come on. I don't understand you, Jose. I don't understand you either.
It's
I
shrimps.
I mean, come on, goes both ways.
Shrimps, yeah, not that, shrimp. That, shrimps.
I mean, I don't know if it was Shakespeare or who, but this word should be used. I mean, I'm going to ask President Trump to put shrimp away from the American dictionary. A guy that put together an S, an H, and an R together is a moron. He's a bad person. You don't do that
really
to anybody.
Badly.
You don't put these three letters together.
I think that's where we should end. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Shrimp should be used.
Shrimps.
By.
Shrimp. The end.
Yeah, shrimp.
Shrimps.
Gambas is easier.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our next guest is a novelist, an award-winning author whose new novel, Run Me to Earth, was published on January 28th. Please welcome to the show, Paul Yoon, everyone. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here.
You nudged me out of, you know, the cave that writers usually are in.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And, like, sunlight and people. Hello, humans.
Oh, there they go, yeah. I'm so happy. They're happy to be seeing you as well. So this is a book about, it's fictional, but it's about a specific time in history.
Yeah, absolutely.
About Laos.
Yep.
And
during the Vietnam War.
During the Vietnam War. And it was certainly in the very beginning, it sort of lays out where we're at. It wasn't something I was super familiar with. Were you familiar with it before you started writing the book?
No, not at all. Growing up in upstate New York, my history classes were completely focused on the Vietnam War and Vietnam. And so I knew very little about Laos. I knew very little about what was going on in Cambodia. And so stumbling upon this was heartbreaking, but also revelatory as well. And I really wanted to sort of explore that.
And then is part of it wanting to give sort of voice to this period in history that so many people don't know much about?
Yeah, absolutely. There's that. I think also, like many of us, I've gone through many emotions these past few years. I've been scared. I've been confused. I've been frustrated. And by certain events. And I think when I stumbled upon this, I felt similarly. And this, so I was sort of attracted to that. Yeah.
This was a years-long bombing campaign.
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah.
And just put into context sort of the size of Laos and the amount of bombs we're talking about.
So Laos is the size of Utah, if anyone's from Utah.
Yeah.
And so it was an incessant just kind of bombing campaign that lasted for 9 years. And statistically, the U.S. dropped over 2 million tons of ordnances, which is more than was dropped on Germany and Japan combined during World War II on Utah.
Yeah.
Essentially, right? And so that breaks down to a bombing every 8 minutes, 24 hours a day for 9 years.
It's incredible.
It's unimaginable.
You've written a lot about war, about people both affected by it, displaced by it. This is something that happened to your grandfather firsthand.
Completely personal to me, yeah. Grandson of a North Korean refugee who escaped, started over again in South Korea, son of an immigrant. My father came here in the 70s. And so I was, you know, I worked on that story 2 books ago. But I also realized it was a personal story for me, but I also realized that this was a story that was occurring everywhere. It had happened, it was happening now. And I want to continue that journey.
The story is told from the perspective of three orphans.
Yeah.
And when you start writing a book like this and you make this choice to use these three characters, do you know when you embark on it what the outcomes of each of their stories are, or do you find it in the writing?
No, not at all. I'm stumbling around in the dark. It's baby steps. It's baby steps and sort of trusting. And also a lot of, you know, mistakes and going down dead ends. And so you're just literally just crawling.
You're married to a fellow writer.
Yes,
a fellow
Laura Vandenberg. Yes.
Laura Vandenberg. And do you guys share your writing with each other? Is it helpful to have another writer, or is it a nightmare to be married to a writer for
No. We share, absolutely. No. So we met before we were publishing. And so writing was sort of just an extension of our relationship. It was sort of like another love language. And so I just remember, you know, living in a tiny basement apartment in Boston with her, and it was like 390 square feet. And I remember that exact number because I was so pissed off that I couldn't afford, you know, like a 400 square foot apartment.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And so her desk was right there, my desk was here, and we would both be writing together. I mean, literally close enough so that I could just reach across and touch her. You know?
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. It's good that you get along. Yeah. Your writing companion, though, in the moment is your dog.
It's my dog, Oscar. My Labrador, my writing buddy, my guardian angel, yes.
And he, he's physically on top of you when you're writing?
Yes. So usually he's literally on my lap while I'm writing.
Okay.
So I'm either using him as a desk or I have to reach over.
This is a sizable dog, too. This is no small dog.
There he is.
Yeah, there he is.
So we're in Austin, Texas right now. As you can see, I'm wearing flip-flops.
Yeah.
And so I write outside, and so he's trying to figure out a way to kind of be on top of me while I write. So he's just guarding me now.
This is obviously a dog you got post 390-foot square foot apartment. Yeah. That's not a good dog for that.
No, he looks like a sea lion. Yeah.
And you're teaching in Austin right now.
Yes, I'm teaching at a graduate writing program called the Michener Center for Writers. And it's the best writing program out there, and it's a privilege to work with them. Geniuses. They're the future of storytelling.
That's really great. And thank you so much for being here, and congratulations on a lovely book. Really delighted to have you. This is Paul Yoon, everybody. Run Me to Earth is fantastic. It's on sale now, wherever books are sold.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night with Seth Meyers. I'm here with Paul Yoon.
Hi, Sarah.
Author of Run Me to Earth. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm really grateful to be here.
So you talked a little bit on the show with Seth about teaching.
Yeah.
And you're at the Michener Center now in Austin.
Yeah.
Can you just kind of run me through like how you actually got started teaching? Because a lot of authors and novelists and other writers we've had on the show are also teachers. And I think that's really interesting when people get to do both.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little trickier for me because I don't have a graduate degree. And so I don't have a kind of usually if you're entering that field, you sort of there are certain requirements that are necessary. But I had people who were really kind and supportive and thought that I would be able to contribute to sort of the future of writers. And so I had a lot of kindness and support.
When you initially meet students, do they ever talk to you about your own work?
No, they don't. They don't. It never comes up. Yeah, it doesn't.
Do they ever talk to you about your wife's work?
Yes, they do. Yes. They're huge fans of my wife's work and I love it. I could talk about my wife's work all day long.
That's
it's fantastic.
Really nice. She's a very good writer too.
She's a very good writer.
You spoke a little bit about this too in your interview, your grandfather. He's your dad's dad.
Yeah, my dad's son.
But you grew up in New York, so your relationship with him was more from a distance.
Yeah, I think I only met him twice. And so what I knew about him were always stories, and so I think his absence always sort of created this, space for my imagination. And in some ways, I think I started kind of writing because of that, because of that absence and wanting to learn more about him, unable to. He also passed away when I was a bit younger, and so never knew the man, really.
How much time was your dad in South Korea for? So was he born in South Korea?
Yeah, he stayed there until his 30s. I can't remember his exact age, and then he came in the late 70s here.
And was his relationship with, I guess, what we're sort of talking about in terms of war and displacement and hearing all those stories firsthand from his dad, what was his sort of experience and relationship with that?
Well, he was very young so he was part of that journey where he was, maybe a year or two when they were escaping.
Oh, wow.
So he has specific memories. They're sort of flashes and fragments, these moments of sort of, swift violence. But my dad is very stoic and reticent. And so, he would say maybe a few things about his experience, but then kind of shut down. Yeah. And so again, this kind of continued sort of trajectory of me imagining my family sort of made me start to write.
Do you think that you'll write more books about this idea of war, displacement, trauma? Do you think this is something you're going to continue along in your writing trajectory, or do you think you'll
It's a great question.
Go somewhere else?
It's like, as artists, do we always, are we always tackling one thing just from different sides, in different angles? I don't know. I do know that, it's hard to work on these books. I take them very seriously. I take the subject matter very seriously.
Yeah, there are parts that were hard to read.
Yeah, and I want to be responsible about it, and I want to create like as complex worlds as possible. And I'm also a Pisces, and so I can't I can't compartmentalize. Right, it's all feeling, and so when I'm working on these books, I'm not the happiest person in the world, and so thank God for my dog, and that's tricky too, right? Just dealing with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I love the book, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
your favorite coffee shop down the street, to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.